Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Heather McFadden, author of Don't Mom Alone and host of a podcast by the same name, joins us today for this freeing conversation. We talk about how rejection is sometimes both protection and direction, how we moms are actually not essential to God's purposes in our children, and that when we deal with wounds in our own lives, we free our friends up to be icing on the cake. Let's dive in. Well, Heather, we're thrilled to have you on the show today. I would like to introduce my friend, new friend, Heather McFadden. And Heather, I know we intersected at family camp this past summer, and I just kind of picked your brain and was so grateful to you for sharing some wisdom with me. So would you tell us a little bit about yourself and just give us a snapshot of your life?
Well, I'm honored. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I love family camp for so many reasons, but getting to meet new people is definitely up on the list. So I'm thrilled that we got to meet there and share our hearts for ministry and women. And so a little snapshot of my life. I grew up in Indiana, actually, and homeschooled for most of my childhood and ended up in Texas and now married for, 23 years and four boys, ages 10, 13, 15, 17. So there's a lot of teen that you just heard. Three teens. And yeah, we live in Dallas, Texas, and I write and host this host my podcast and do mom stuff. So
it's awesome. Yeah. Well, so one of the reasons why, you know, I just wanted to pick your brain was because, you know, you shared at family camp that you do podcasts and you had just recently written a book called Don't Mom Alone. And so I wanted just to ask you about that. Let's start with that. How did God birth this idea for your book? And you shared how it just, God just kind of led you there in an organic, unexpected way. So take us through that journey.
Yeah. Anything I'm doing has been prompted by God. Even writing online, the first time I got that little prompt was while I was at a MOPS meeting and sharing my mom testimony. I got the little nudge that I should start writing about how God was informing my motherhood. And so I started a blog then. And then a few years later, a book agent reached out. And at the time I had a newborn, a two-year-old, a four-year-old, a six-year-old. Life was crazy. Yeah. And he asked if I'd ever considered writing a book. And I thought, no, nope, no interest in that. But he was a well-known agent. It seemed like a God opportunity. And I thought, well, you know, I could find a gal to come hang out with my kids one or two days a week in the summer. And I could go to a, you know, Panera Bread and just work on it. And so I sent him my first rough draft of a book proposal, and the feedback I got from him was so jarring and hard to hear, and words that have stuck with me that I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try to fix it. And then I just was so discouraged. I shut my computer. I told my husband I'm never going to write again. I went and got my nails done. And my husband wisely said, I don't think that's how writing works. I think it's like any art form, and there's rough drafts and you go back and you keep working on it and you just get better. And so I was like, okay, but I'm going to need a minute. Well, I kept wondering, is this a God opportunity or is this a distraction from what I feel like is a really big assignment of raising four boys? Like, is this a distraction from that? And so I just kept going back and forth with God. And he kind of pointed out that it's not technically a distraction from my boys because I do make time to scroll Instagram and Facebook, and I do make time to watch shows on Netflix. So maybe I could not do those things and work on the book and my margin that I'm kind of numbing out typically. Right. So I started working really hard on it again a few years later, and then I brought it to my agent. I thought I was going to be signing contracts, and he said, you know what? It's now been 2 years, or I guess a year and a half, and a lot of the mom bloggers have been picked up for contracts. Publishers aren't looking for mom books right now. We kind of missed our window. And I was like, what?
Yeah. What?
And anyway, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm
No, this is good.
Yeah. I'm sitting with him, and nearby is a group of women that I hosted a blogging conference with, and they were talking about next year's conference. And I told them I couldn't do that because I was going to write this book, and they're all full of life. And I'm looking at this thing I thought I was going to do. And I just heard Bianca Olthoff teach on Elijah and the dry bones and how God told him to prophesy over them. And I just felt like this book opportunity was just a pile of dry bones. And God prompted me to surrender those bones to him, and that when the time came, he would breathe life into them, that it would look a little ridiculous if I said, okay, I'm not going to listen to that agent. I'm going to make this book happen. I'm going to self-publish. That I just really felt peace about letting that sit right there and trust him for his timing. And yet I'd made space in my life to use my gifts and talents towards that book writing. And I wasn't going to do that anymore. And I remembered a lot of my friends from blogging. I was in this little mastermind group. Two of them had started podcasts. And this was in 2013 when podcasts weren't a thing really for people. Serial hadn't come out yet. And so I asked them, can you teach me how to do a podcast? And so I started interviewing people. And so that's now 9 years later, I'm still interviewing people. But in that process, God kind of moved to allow for me to write a book proposal again, to actually be brave and try again. And, I don't know, that didn't talk about the don't mom alone, but I can get into that. Or I don't know if you want to stop and talk about what I just shared.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we've heard this from so many people, right? That, you see people in maybe in leadership roles, or in, you know, they've written a book, or, you know, they've published an album or whatever, but then you start to talk to them and you hear these stories of rejection along the way. Mm-hmm. And so I would just love to hear a little bit more about that. Take us back to the rejection, because I think a lot of times what we do is we get to those places of rejection and we just stop, you know, and your husband just kind of, I think, spoke some words to you that kind of pushed you past that place of just kind of being stuck and, you know, kind of wallowing in that and almost, you know, allowing it to be something that just kind of, you took as, well, I guess I'm no good at this, you know?
Yeah.
But talk a little bit about that rejection and how God has even used that in you and to shape your ministry to be what it is today.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of my life is trying to control and navigate so I don't put myself in a risky situation where I am rejected or that I lose others' approval. I mean, when it comes to my kids or when it comes to my work, like I'm doing everything I can so that you don't reject me. And so those were some obvious moments where I really was, and yet God showed up with better plans. And so I think the thing that I'm fearing most and I'm working so hard to not let happen, it's a good reminder for me, even as we're reflecting on it, to say, and yet, even in those rejections, God had better for me if I would allow that to happen and release my plans to him and trust his ways, as we know, are always better and bigger than my ways. Like I always tell my boys, sometimes rejection is actually protection. It's actually a direction. And times when they haven't made football teams or, you know, soccer teams, and it ended up that the other sport they went to was a better match and God showed up in even bigger ways. It's kind of like this process of release and trust, and it grows our faith. It's worth it, even though we do not want it. And once again, it's something that Jesus can relate to. He never asks us to go through anything he wasn't willing to. His rejection led him to the cross, which ultimately is our salvation. And so if we can keep these things in mind, I'm even preaching to myself a little bit, and instead of trying to orchestrate and prevent that from happening.
Wow. I wrote down just as you were talking, sometimes rejection is protection and sometimes rejection is direction. Mm-hmm. I think those are really wise words. And even thinking about the cross from how you just even how you kind of led through that whole conversation. I've never really thought about this, but you know, if you just look at the cross from a human perspective, it's rejection. You know, Christ was rejected by man and was, we could see it as, okay, he was killed and defeated. And yet that's not actually the story, you know? I think that's such a good word of just for listeners to go, okay, sometimes this rejection, though it is so painful, is actually for my good. Yeah. And that God has even better things for me on the other side of it. So those are powerful words, but I think we don't usually push ourselves past that, you know? And then, like you said, we avoid it, you know? So, well, one thing we love to do, and we're already kind of doing it on this podcast, is just wrestle through the hardest parts of life. So I would love for you to just to take us to one of the more painful seasons you recently shared a little bit about that took place in 2016 and how God specifically prepared you for that time.
Yeah. In the midst of just mothering and hard, we're actually in a really good place as a family around this time. And I got a phone call in November of 2016 that my parents, who were living in Costa Rica at the time, my mom had discovered a lump in her breast, and they were going to come to Dallas, where they had doctors already established in the States, and figure out what the treatment plan would be. And so they moved in with us, and they had plans to maybe get an apartment depending on what the treatment would be. And we were moving forward with chemo for her, and then she was going to get surgery and radiation. But as we were prepping for them to maybe find an apartment, we were going to go pick up a dresser. And I came home from picking up my boys, and my dad was going to go with me, and he came to the car and he was completely jaundiced. And I was like, what? And he had had colon cancer a couple years prior. And we come to find out the next week that the cancer had moved into his liver. And within a month, he had passed away. And it just coincided with, my mom had already started aggressive chemotherapy, and she was hitting that wall you hit in your second round of chemo. And so on the day he passed, January of 2017, I could barely get her out of my home to take her to the hospice facility so that she could see my dad on his last day. Like, they were both lying in bed, just, I mean, it was awful. It was so, so hard. But prior to that, God had really moved in my heart and my life to reconnect me to my community. I had really hit rock bottom in 2013, 2014 with just trying to hold it all together with my family. Ended up seeing a counselor, ended up in inner healing prayer with friends, and 12-step group with a small group. And through those relationships that I had reestablished and built back up, those were the people who carried me through that hardest season of my life. And I'm so incredibly thankful, as we talk about rejection or hard things, that I leaned into the hard, the panic attacks, and I sought out help in other people and professionals and leaned into that hard. Because I didn't know that I would need those relationships so much in the 2 years after. And so my encouragement always to moms or women is, look for those, you know, warning signs or red flags of anxiety or depression, and lean into them and bring them to God, and consider gathering community around you. Because when you hit the even harder or the like tragedies that will come, we're not promised a perfect story. That is not the time to say, oh, I better go find some good, deep friends that I can walk through with this. But the time is now to lean in and listen to that and be vulnerable and authentic with people, so that you aren't trying to garner that when the tragedy comes.
Wow. Talk a little bit about just even how you did that, as far as how did you find those people? What did that look like for you? Like you said, before you hit some of the hard things that you didn't even know were coming, but just on a practical level, what did that look like for you of finding those deep, meaningful relationships?
I think for me, it was the people were around me. It was dealing with my isolating beliefs that was not help. Like I was not showing up and sharing what was truly hard. Or I was so fearful again of that rejection or losing approval that I felt like I had to keep up this false image that I had it all together. I was the good Christian person. And so my first step was to reach out to a friend who I known who'd seen a counselor and ask her for that counselor's phone number. That's really vulnerable. That's really opening yourself up. Asking for a phone number feels like a massive step. The next massive step is actually calling the counselor and setting up your first appointment. To me, those are two huge steps, but there is such freedom and grace when you're in a room. And I mean, I could have had this for free. I have mentors in my life and through our church that I could have gotten the same counsel from, but having someone outside of your life give you perspective on, yeah, of course that's hard. Of course that's hard. Your husband's working all the time. Of course that's hard. You have four young kids. You're in a school community that's very demanding. And so no wonder you're feeling all of that pressure. Like that was really helpful. And that gave me the encouragement to go back into community. We kind of had pulled away because it was just so chaotic with so many young boys. And I think also God just prompted me with, I said yes to studying Francis Chan's book, Forgotten God, with some friends. And through that conversation, they just invited me into learning more about the Holy Spirit. And God just keeps bringing up conversations with people on the sidelines of baseball games or basketball, where I'm meeting other moms who are on similar journeys, where they're just learning more about the Holy Spirit and the power we have to heal past wounds and move forward in freedom. And so I've done interviews with a gal, Jennifer Barnett, on freedom prayer. Dallas Bible here in Texas has a great freedom prayer ministry. And I'm just a big fan of allowing God into those broken past places so you can move forward in freedom. And that impacts your friendships, because if you're not taking that woundedness into the friendship, that friend is now free to be icing on the cake. You found your identity and worth and belonging in God. And then the relationship gets to be on top of that. Instead of requiring your friends to give you identity, worth, and belonging, that's just bonus, just bonus onto what you've already found in your relationship with God. And so it freed up some of those friendships so that I could be vulnerable and authentic, because I wasn't fearing the rejection or approval, because my worth wasn't dependent on their acceptance of me.
Wow. So, and this kind of goes back into your book title, but also your podcast title of Don't Mom Alone. It's not just about bringing 100 people together around you, because you know, you can be in a room full of people and yet still feel very lonely. And yet you can be deeply known by a few people and feel like so filled up and freed up in these beautiful ways that God's designed. So just, would you just talk a little bit about that, even Don't Mom Alone, that theme? It doesn't just mean, you know, make sure you have 20 play dates a week. That's not what you're saying.
Because the podcast used to be called God-Centered Mom from my blog that God prompted me to start. And then when I did have that book rejection, I started the podcast, God-Centered Mom. And some of that pressure and that panic attack was because people were calling me the God-Centered Mom. And that is not what my goal was.
Right.
It was like, no. I need God to be in the center because I'm super self-centered, or I'm really circled around my kids and their happiness. And I need him to disrupt all that. But that pressure of holding that up. So when a listener said, hey, I've been listening to the episodes and using them as small group material and discussing them with my friends, I thought, oh my gosh, that's so cool. It's kind of like a book club, but with podcasts. So we started calling it podcast clubs. And then we were like, I said, oh, this is awesome. I don't want just isolated women listening. to facilitate and use it as an excuse to gather. Now you don't mom alone. And so we would use the hashtag, and then it just really resonated with people. And changing that name was scary, but at the same time, I felt released from me trying to uphold this God-centered mom concept. But it encapsulated the God-centered mom. Everything I'd learned about how motherhood went better when I didn't hold the full weight of responsibility for how my kids turned out. Don't mom alone is you are important, but you are not responsible. You know, this is what I say. You are important, but you're not essential to the good plans God has for your kids. I know friends whose moms passed away when they were young, and yet these friends are still living out the good plans that God had planned for them. Their life was not dependent on their mom's presence. And yet, as moms, we often hold ourselves to such a high standard, and we only allow for that freedom for moms who have passed away. That doesn't make sense. Why don't we walk in that same freedom here on earth with our kids in relationship? You are important. That relationship matters. My friends grieve the loss of their moms not being in their lives, but it didn't keep them. It doesn't mean God is like, oh no, now I can't do anything.
Wow.
And if you have a parent that maybe didn't show up as you hoped and they're living, but they weren't the mom or dad you wanted them to be, you're set free. They are not essential to you becoming who God has planned for you to be. So this concept of don't mom alone too then cycles through. Like, your goal is to love and connect with your child. And hopefully we don't get a choice over this, but point them to salvation so that the ultimate don't mom alone move is they're indwelt with the Holy Spirit and God's working on the inside out with your kids, and you are not momming alone. Like, he's working through his Spirit in their lives. So anyway, that don't mom alone, I'm big on mentoring. I'm big on, you know, friendship, but ultimately I think any of that community comes from you working on your beliefs with God. That has to be the first step before you say, well, I better plan a bunch of play dates, or I better, you know, host a dinner party. That's not what I'm saying. That will continue to not go well. Just like in 12-step programs, we work through, like, what's this pattern of belief and emotion and action that you keep having and bringing into relationships? And have you diagnosed what's going on in you when you are in relationship with others?
Wow. Ooh, those are some good, encouraging words. I love that. I had never really thought of that angle specifically, that, you know, if a mom passes away, yes, we trust that God is going to sovereignly continue to fulfill the purposes of God in that person's life, in that child's life. And yet we still have our fingers so tightly clenched around our kids' behavior. And it's, you know, every little decision. You know, last week I got a message from my son's teacher that he had to go to the principal's office. And, you know, my initial reaction is like, oh my goodness, I apologize. And then I go, oh my gosh, what am I doing wrong? You know? So I think that's such a powerful reminder, and hopefully just frees women up. I want to ask you, I know you shared that you have 4 boys ranging in ages from 10 to 17, lots of teens there, like you said, but what are you learning personally as a mother in a busy season, parenting a wide range of ages?
Gosh, aren't we just learning all the time? Like,
hopefully.
I do think that as your kids get older and they start like driving and making their own decisions, I just see it in moms. There's a little bit of defeat. Like, I thought how it worked was I quit my job. Let's say you had an amazing career and you decided to stay home in your little formula, and you put all of your energy and time into making this amazing childhood for your kids and showing them how loved they are by God and cutting their sandwiches into butterfly shapes and doing nightly family devotions. And you have done all of this, and now this is what happened. This is who they've become. And there's a real sense of despair and defeat when the world then comes in and the child turns toward the world. And there's just this like this formula didn't work out for me. And I think the gift of having older kids is I see which formulas to toss and which formulas to keep. As far as, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of formulas, but I think in general, a majority of the women I interact with sometimes disrupt the things that actually matter for the things that don't. So getting the perfect Instagram picture matters more than the connection and the relationship with the child and the attempt to get the picture. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I used to set up crafts for my kids, and like, I would get so upset if they didn't do it exactly like I wanted. And I'm like, hello, you're missing the whole point. I would put the wrong thing as important. And right. I think that I've pulled back on some of that. But then even this morning, I'm reminded of like, I can get real intense on things that I think matter so much. And in doing so, I actually disrupt the relationship that is what matters the most. Them knowing they're loved and belonging and, you know, meeting them at the foot of the cross. Like sometimes there's this, why can't you get your act together? Why can't I get my act together? Why do I struggle to admit my wrongdoings? And I like to shame and blame. What's going on in me? Because, you know, so much of, and then like even judging other moms, like, oh man, did you see what Bobby did? Mm-hmm. And it's like, his mom isn't strict enough, or his mom is, you know, his mom is too strict. It's like, we all start judging because we're so fearful of that outcome for our kids. So we like to pick apart our friends' approaches. And it's like, none of us really know what we're doing. None of us really know what we're doing. If we can just show up for one another and listen and say, man, that's hard. That is hard. What do you need from me right now? Instead of advising, really asking, like, you know, recently a bunch of us, our kids did really poorly on a science test. Well, I was feeling a whole range of emotions. I was feeling anger. Why did so many kids get a bad grade? There's a common, like, maybe this is a teaching problem. Then there was fear. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, like, does this mean he'll fail? Then there's fear, like, will this cause him to go into a cycle of depression that we've been in before? Then there's pain, because I'm thinking of how hard this child's journey's been to this point, and here's another thing that's hard. And then a friend pointed out, she said, because we were sharing in our small group, we share our feelings when things happen. And she said, I also heard love. And it was just helpful to be vulnerable, to share what I was feeling with friends, to invite their voice in my life, and to be reminded that ultimately all of those feelings in that situation pointed back to, I just really love this child. And I want a challenge-less experience, but that's not what what we just talked about. That's not how God shows up, and that's not how we grow, is without challenges. So I think I'm learning a lot, but I will tell you, as you get older as a mom, you feel like you know less. You just are like,
ironic.
I don't know. And then you see posts from kids with a 2-year-old, and you're like, and they're expounding on all their wisdom, and you're like, it's hard. It's hard to
this you wait. Yeah.
It's like all these parenting experts of 2-year-olds. I'm like,
That's good. Well, I love this quote that you have from Jim Gaffigan on your website. He says, what's it like to have 4 kids? You're drowning and someone hands you a baby.
Yeah.
So funny and yet so profoundly true.
Yep.
So what advice would you give to a young mom who very much finds herself in that place and feels overwhelmed?
Yeah, I think I used to say, I am so honored that it's such a gift, and I don't take it lightly that God would allow us to have 4 kids, because I know that is a challenge for people. I know that that doesn't come with a lot of emotions and heartache for a lot of moms and women, but it also felt like I have this gift and they're so stinking cute, But have you ever been in a room of really cute bunnies? Like a room full of really cute bunnies is terrifying. It was like so much cuteness that all needed me at once. They all needed me at once. And I even still feel it. Like yesterday, I was feeling very overwhelmed with, I'm texting with a son about, he was buying a suit for homecoming, and I was trying to do something for another son, and another son wanted me to make him a shake, and another son needed help with homework, and they all needed me at the same time. And that's the context of my despair, right? I just heard Paige Brown talk about Elijah and his moment of despair after the miracle when God rained down fire. Anyway, and then he's like, so despairing. And she said, the context makes sense. This miracle happened. People didn't respond like Elijah thought they would. Jezebel wants to kill Elijah. And so he just gives up. And I feel like the context of that young mom, or the mom of young kids, feeling overwhelmed makes sense. You're fearful. You're fearful. And you are a limited human being. And a lot is being asked of you physically. You're exhausted mentally, emotionally. You probably are isolated because it's just really hard to connect with people in that season. And so it makes sense. You have every reason to feel that despair. But I think she pointed out the actual cause is when our perspective has shifted. One, so we are seeing the problem as bigger than God. So all of those needs. And I think ultimately for me, it was wanting to make my kids happy and wanting to not fail in that moment. I was overwhelmed on our little feelings chart for 12 step and for our small group is next to fear. So the primary emotion is fear. When you feel overwhelmed, you actually are feeling fear. And so I often say, okay, I'm overwhelmed right now. What am I afraid of? Am I afraid of failing? Am I afraid of rejection? Am I afraid of their actual harm? There were times with lots of little kids that I couldn't watch them all. And I was overwhelmed and fearful they would actually get hurt in some way. So I have made some of those things bigger and made myself be the one who is responsible beyond trusting that God, ultimately nothing's going to happen outside of his hand. And so I think some of that is making those problems bigger and forgetting who God is. So I'm having just a moment of perspective being off. I think also like what we were talking about before, I have a plan and the plan's not working out and I'm overwhelmed in that. And it's like, well, if the plan failed, it was the problem with the plan, not with God. And then she pointed out that sometimes we put God in a box, that my moment to moment life is not important to him, that I don't have to invite him into that overwhelm, that I don't, that he, it doesn't matter. And that it's really all up to me. Like he's worried about the war in Ukraine. He's worried about these other things. And I forget to invite him into even the emotion I'm feeling, or, hey, God, I'm feeling a lot of fear right now. Yeah. I'm afraid of disappointing this 2-year-old. Can you show up, Holy Spirit, and calm my nervous system? Because our bodies are reacting to the stress of that. Like it makes sense that we're having those feelings. Can you give me insight into how I could maybe like make time to get away and maybe go to the bathroom and listen to worship music for a second? Right. Like I want the mom of lots of young kids to know it makes sense. Adding guilt to that and shame that something's wrong with you because you're feeling that way is not helpful.
Yeah.
It is legitimately hard. The context makes sense.
Yeah.
It requires the supernatural presence of God to allow you to have insight into how you can find calm or make a way out, or maybe you are taking on a lot more emotionally, like you're taking on your child's happiness and you aren't responsible for that, or you're taking on a peaceful home and that's maybe not the reality for these years. Like you are taking ownership of things that are not, you are not capable of providing. You're not capable of making sure your kids love Jesus. You're not capable of making them kind. You're not capable of keeping them out of the principal's office. Like there is only so much you can do. And then you're releasing the rest to God and trusting that it's not outside of his plan is, I think, the deeper work that needs to happen. So I think in those moments, it's paying attention. What are the red flags? What am I feeling? And where am I not trusting God? And what am I taking on that's not mine to take on?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a lot of good encouragement. Heather, this is so good. And I could ask you a lot more questions, but thank you so much for just taking time to be with us and just to share some of your wisdom and your thoughts and your journey and where God's brought you. So I'm thrilled for people to get to hear this conversation. So,
well, I am honored that you invited me anytime. Let's chat.
Awesome. Well, yeah. And I might need to call you next time my son gets called to the principal's office.
Been there, done that, girl.
Yes. Oh man. Yes. It's like, it was not the first, not the second, but the third, you know, first grade gets called to the principal's office and you're thinking, man, I thought we escaped that. And you're tempted to believe we must be doing something right. You know, we must be doing something right. Yeah. And then you have these humbling moments where God's like, hey, really, you know, like this isn't about you and your perfect parenting and, you know,
well, and I would just say parenting. They're so not done yet. The one of mine who in first grade, I was told by a teacher he would never make it through third grade is now thriving at an all boys high school in their hardest academic schedule, doing great, loving it, like so self-directed, super responsible leader, like some of those things that are so raw and get them in trouble in first grade are the actual gifts that make them amazing teenagers and adults. And so I know it's super hard in the moment, but if I could go back to when I was parenting that first grader, I kind of wish I would have shown him more love and acceptance in that season instead of feeling embarrassed about the behavior and how it made me look or doubling down on, well, we need to work harder on making your character better. And I'm even hearing myself and thinking of my 13-year-old this morning and how I was like doubling down, like he just was not understanding how something he did was hurtful and mean. Yeah. And so I'm thinking he really needs acceptance. Like I can tell him that in a loving way without disrupting him knowing he is loved by me. So I'm just kind of taking that in for my own.
Funny the things you hear yourself say, and then you're like, I really should take my own advice.
Yeah, there's another kid that I could apply that to. Yeah, right now. I don't have to worry about how I didn't do that when he was in first grade, but yes.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I really do
For this season's outros, I'm thinking of doing something a little bit different.
It's really hard to take you seriously right now.
Why?
Because you already look ridiculous.
No, I think you'll actually like this change.
Okay.
So I'm wanting to focus specifically in the outros on organizational leadership and ministry. With the questions.
Wait, why can't I ask them to someone else? I don't know a lot about that.
You say that, but the fact is you've been crushing it at a local women's ministry organization for what, 4 or 5 years now?
I don't know if I would say crushing it. And I don't know if it's, well, yes, maybe 4 or 5 years.
You can't say crushing it because you're you. Yeah. I can say crushing it because I'm your husband.
Very sweet of you. I appreciate that.
So you have a lot of leadership, and collectively we have a lot of leadership surrounding organizational ministry and leadership in general.
Yeah, so I feel like you're whispering. Why are you whispering?
Am I whispering? I don't know. I'm also changing it to be an ASMR outro.
Get out your wrappers.
Okay, I'll speak louder.
Yeah, there you go.
So how, for Woven, thinking about Woven specifically, how do you set priorities for your organization? What's your process?
Well, I think the very beginning, we have developed a mission statement, right? So we have a mission statement of to equip women to study the Bible and cultivate meaningful relationships. So that's our biggest rock of all. That's the mission of the organization, the heartbeat. And then about a year or so after developing that, we developed core values. And those four core values have been kind of like the building blocks. I see them as like the pillar of the pillars of almost the house that we're building of Woven, if that makes sense, or like the legacy of Woven. And so those four pillars are centered on Christ, biblically grounded, intentionally relational, and postured in humility. So those four then have kind of helped flesh out the ministry. And then as the mission statement has kind of been put into action, there have been, you know, different needs and ways that we've been able to kind of see that we can meet those needs. And so the programs have overflowed first from the mission statement, which is then built on by the core values. And so the, you know, the central programs of Bible study, retreat, and gatherings, each of those have a specific purpose that we see, you know, carry out the mission statement. So to equip women to study the Bible, we see the Bible studies as being an overflow of that part of the mission statement. The retreat is really a time where we see both studying the Bible and developing meaningful relationships really comes together for maximum impact. And then the outreaches or the gatherings we see as an opportunity to live out our faith and bring in the community and encourage women to come to the table. And those really lean more into the relational side of the ministry. And then the podcast part is really kind of just the hope of reaching a broader audience with what God's doing here. And so the idea that what God's doing in Woven locally wouldn't just stay here, but that it would have a ripple effect and that people could listen to it all over and at any point in time and be impacted and encouraged by it. So I don't know if that specifically answers your question, but I feel like I see it almost like less about, oh, this process and from reading these books from Patrick Lencioni or whatever, but more of, okay, God, you've given me this mission statement. And now, God, help us to build and lay the foundation with core values. And now help us to really refine the specific projects or things that we want to put our energy towards. And so that's just kind of been a gradual process, I think, of day by day seeking God's direction and Him laying the foundation for the future of the ministry.
So you're saying that whenever opportunities come up for the organization, be it programs or other opportunities, you run everything through the filter of your mission statement and those four core values. And that becomes how you set priorities. Those dictate how you set priorities.
Yes, absolutely. Like somebody asked me recently, hey, would you, would Woven be a sponsor for this? And it was something great. And I love the person and I love this, what they're doing. But I just kind of came back to, you know, this is our mission statement and this is kind of what we're committed to. And so we're really trying to be wise with, you know, because there's a million good opportunities, right? But how do we steward the resources and the, you know, the funds that have been entrusted to us best? And so, yes, I definitely see it as kind of like a filter of putting it through that kind of like colander almost, if you will, of like, how does it line up with, you know, with all of these pieces that God's kind of been slowly helping us to build in order to, you know, to move forward with this ministry.
So your mission statement and core values inform your programs, not the other way around.
Yes. Yes.
So how often do you reevaluate those core values and or mission statement or revisit them?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say that we keep them at the forefront, like with our board. We come back to them. But again, because we're really new, we're just this summer, we have our first in-person board meeting where we're going to really be fleshing out more of that stuff together. And looking at a statement of faith and kind of refining some of those, again, the inner workings and the outworkings of how what we believe informs the decisions that we make and where we spend funds, what we put our energy towards. So again, I would say like that's something that we're talking about right now, even like how do we make that more sustainable, probably an annual at our in-person board meeting, an annual process of looking through those things and how are we being faithful to the mission statement, the core values, and the, you know, statement of faith that we will create all those things. How are we being good stewards of those things and allowing them to lead and guide and not, you know, our own agenda or kind of getting off course and lost in the weeds.
See what I mean? Crushing it. What? I don't think you realize that a lot of organizations don't even understand those concepts that you were just talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So you're doing a great job.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Love you.
I love you.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown. Recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.